You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Most New Yorkers are familiar with the Strand, the Manhattan store that's crammed to every corner with miles and miles of books. In her first novel, Sheridan Hay tells the story of a young woman who comes to New York City from Tasmania, finds a job at a bookstore that sounds a lot like the Strand, and embarks upon a quest to locate a lost Herman Melville manuscript. She's called her book The Secret of Lost Things. It's published by Doubleday, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Sheridan Hay to my show. Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
You say you began working on this project after your mother died. How did that lead to the writing of this novel?
Well, it's a good question, and it's not always clear to me the way in which those things sort of overlap, but I think that trying to work through a certain anguish over the loss of my mother, which had kind of come to stand in for home, because I really only went back to Australia. I've lived here for more than 20 years, and I married an American, and I have American children. I think it was really only the loss of my mother that really propelled me into what became a Bildungsroman, you know, which is sort of essentially a kind of a fable and a quest story, as you mentioned. And the thing about quests, the quest story is such an old form. And if I think about it, I think about the way in which we're sort of searching for home. And I think, you know, Australia and my mother had become synonymous with that. And it just sort of began there.
Well, the story of Australia is a quest story. So in the back of every Australian's mind, I think, is that what happened when people started crossing the country and disappearing in the middle of the country.
Yeah, I think that's true, and how one reconciles oneself to distance, I think, is some kind of Australian story. But, you know, we're all looking for a home in the world, and Rosemary Savage, my protagonist, finds a home in the arcade. I think a lot of us find our homes in bookshops.
Well, first she's bookish, so that's where she would go. But she finds her home in New York. She comes to New York from Tasmania.
Right.
She's just 18. She has $300 and her mother's ashes. Now, this is not autobiographical because you came here while your mother was still alive.
That's
but,
right.
But she comes to New York at 18 because she is trying to find a real home for herself. Could she not have gone to Sydney or to some other Melbourne or something and found what she could find in New York?
I think it changes it's all about scale, really, isn't it? And I think it changes the scope of the story. She sort of really enters. It is this fairy tale kind of, quite deliberately, a fairy tale fable-like novel, and she needs to be sort of sent into the theater of the world, actually. And I think Sydney, which she had some familiarity with, from her mother was a hat maker, she had some familiarity with it as a child, and it is the beginning of a love of cities. So.
Well, you're from Sydney, you're not from Tasmania, but by having her come from Tasmania, a much smaller place, there would be a much bigger culture shock when
of
she
course.
Comes to New York.
Of course, and in that sense, it's a story of isolation. And this has to do with her bookishness as well. She's constructed herself from books, and the writing is elusive and filled with references because she is somebody who has, in a sense, more experience with the theatrical reality of books than she does with the world.
But she doesn't go to university, which is where most bookish people wind up going.
No, she's an autodidact, not unlike myself, and not unlike my hero, my crush of the novel, Herman Melville.
Who never went to college?
No, never went to
college. But he taught himself an awful lot about whales along the way, and he didn't even have Google to help him.
No, not even Google. He taught himself a lot about a lot of things. It's really quite remarkable. His, his pursuit, his voracious pursuit of intellectual knowledge is really kind of incredible.
Well, let's back up. So she winds up working at the arcade bookstore, which is kind of like the Strand. And I do have questions about the Strand that have always interested me, like how to I can't find a book. And then I ask one of the clerks, and they go right over to the right spot to a place
right.
that makes absolutely no sense to me. Mm. And they pull a book out. Do they just memorize every book? Should I ask you that first, or should I ask you about the Herman Melville plot?
you get
to choose.
Well, you know, I think just to talk a little bit about the experience that you're talking about at the Strand, I'm not sure that that's really a very different experience than people who frequent their favorite bookshops. You know, that tale of third book down, red spine, you know, lying across the top type of thing is something that, you know, I wanted to pay a kind of homage to. This is a feat of memory. And, of course, Rosemary is on a voyage in time. And so a thematic element of the novel is memory. And the thing about a bookshop is that it becomes this wonderful metaphor, whether it's the Strand or whether it's the Arcade or whether it's anybody's store where they feel at home. It becomes this wonderful kind of theater in a sense.
But also a repository of information. Now, to some degree, I think, being replaced in some people's minds by the internet and other sources.
Well, hence the homage. I mean, I think that the book is quite melancholic in that sense that bookselling has, even when I started as a teenager working in bookshops, felt elegiac. You know, it's sort of forever in decline. And I hope that that's not the case. I've just been around for 2 weeks and had plenty of experience of independent bookstores, you know, that contradict that to some extent, although it takes quite a deal of effort on their part.
But they're usually a lot smaller. The nice thing about a place like Arcade or the Strand is that it's a world unto itself. Mm. And so even someone who is as naive and unworldly as your heroine, somebody who perhaps would rely on books and a small group of people who love books rather than developing a real personal life, that would be a perfect environment.
A perfect environment. And, of course, she's on a quest, so each one of those eccentric characters that she encounters are going to impart something necessary to the construction of an adult self. And the eccentricity of them, it means, of course, that they are in the theater of the bookshop. There are lots of roles to play, and a role in and of itself is a kind of disguise. So, of course, each one of them is not perhaps who she might imagine they are.
So this is really Rosemary in Bookland. Sheridan Hay's novel, The Secret of Lost Things, is published by Doubleday. She learns that there's a lost Herman Melville manuscript, Isle of the Cross. There really is a lost manuscript, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And we know the plot of the Isle of the Cross because Herman Melville wrote these fascinating letters to Nathaniel Hawthorne, you know, who he deeply admired and felt a very strong attachment to. He wrote these letters describing the plot of a novel that he hoped Hawthorne would write, in a sense, for him. He came across some details through a lawyer of a woman who had been abandoned by her sailor husband, a sailor who she had nursed, who had been shipwrecked on her island. This is one of the ways in which The Tempest ends up being an underpinning, of course, Rosemary coming from Tasmania as well, a wild island, being an underpinning of the novel. But in any case, these letters are called the Agatha letters because that's what the name of the real woman was. And it was just sort of fascinating to me that one writer would be saying to another writer, here, I'm going to give you this. I have a great idea for you. You know, it's
I've done that a few times, and the other writers say, hey, that is a great idea. You write it.
Yes, you write it. And that's exactly what happened. Melville wrote it himself. We know from some correspondence between his sister and within his family. But we don't know what happened to the lost Isle of the Cross. He submitted it to Harper's, and we understand that it was rejected. We don't really know why. There's no correspondence suggesting that. But his career was very much on the decline. And after the publication of Pierre, people were calling him insane. And he was having an extremely difficult time. And then we don't see anything again until Bartleby and the Piazza Tales appear. And between Pierre and those short novels, novellas, something really significant had shifted. And what fascinated me about The Isle of the Cross is this thematic element of remorse, that he's fascinated, and this is what he tells Hawthorne, and that the letters are in my novel. He's fascinated with this, the idea of resignation and remorse, and one can sort of project into that what was going on in his own career.
You have mentioned that you have all these little subtle sub-themes here and references.
Mm.
One of the characters is Walter Geist. He's an albino. And
Well, Ishmael
Herman
had
Melville,
one, so yeah. Rosemary has one too.
And the great white whale is an albino as well, and that was a quest.
Right. It's a very old story. You know, one's encounter with strangeness, and that's something. And there is a rather disturbing encounter ultimately between Rosemary and Walter Geist, but this is part of her becoming.
On the other hand, we don't want to give the listeners the impression that this is just like a fairy tale. There's a lot of inside bookstore stuff.
Yes.
Like shoplifters. they play a role in all this. What kinds of books do people tend to steal?
I think people tend to steal pretty much. I don't think they distinguish necessarily between what they might wish for. I think
the rare books are just as likely to be stolen as the paperbacks outside.
Yes, I think it is. I think, you know, that in this case a rare book has been stolen, and one of the characters is discovered. But, you know, I think that what I'm trying to get at in terms of sort of talking about theft is ideas of value. And how value, I mean, some of the volumes in the novel, and these prices are all accurate, are, you know, $40,000 for Ossip Mendelstam. You know, I mean, I did some research to find these prices are kind of extraordinary to me. And one wonders how value is ascertained in these kinds of instances.
A number of these characters, you get the feeling that lust is mostly a lust for knowledge rather than on the sexual side. Were those the kinds of people you met when you worked in the bookstore?
I met all sorts of people when I worked in bookshops, but certainly this particular kind of fascination with collectors and collecting, with the sort of the desire for acquisition, definitely struck me as having an erotic aspect and almost sort of carnal in the desire to accumulate. And I talk in the novel about, well, some characters talk to themselves, to each other, about collectors and the way in which they feel that the ultimate relationship that we can have to an object, whether it's a book or anything else, is to own it, is to possess it. And there is this sense too that in possessing a collection, one has halted time, in a sense. You know, one is locked within that collection.
That's why people are so reluctant to part with books that they'll never read again. It doesn't matter. It's there. They don't want to give it up.
They don't want to. I certainly feel that way.
Sheridan Hayes' first novel. Obviously, there'll more to come. this one's called The Secret of Lost Things. It is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with
Thank
us today.
Thank you. A real pleasure, Leonard.